Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to Screen Heroes.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Screen Heroes podcast. I am your host, Derek, and I have with me my two lovely, longtime, fabulous co-hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hi.
Hi. You always sound like unsure of if you should respond to me, Ray. You're always calling on me.
No, I feel like that introduction was just a little too nice to be like genuine.
Wow. I mean,
so I feel like, you know, you were stretching for time or something already.
I mean, I'm just
not that you don't like us, that you were just like stretching for time.
No, it's fine. I'm just talking to my best friend and my wife, you know, no big. I don't even like you guys.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's why I do this show. I want to see how many episodes of a podcast I can do with people I dislike. It's a social experiment.
Well, you're truly brave.
Anyway, tonight, today, this week on the show, we are discussing The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Episode 2, The Star-Spangled Man. And that means this is your spoiler warning for anything in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, as well as the rest of the existing MCU and possible plot points from existing comic book source material. So you have been warned. This is your warning.
All the warnings.
So things definitely ratcheted up a notch this week.
Yeah, they did.
I liked this episode a lot more than the first one. I knew they had to kind of like set some groundwork and all, but I really liked this episode.
Of course, because you finally get to see the two of them together.
Right. I mean, yeah.
That's what the whole show's, you know, set up for. So
that's a fair point. And that really was the best part, right? Is just the two of them bickering and bantering off of each other.
I can't believe they went to couples therapy and they like intertwined legs, and I'm like, oh man.
I thought it was adorable personally.
Yeah, it was absolutely adorable.
Yeah, I liked that scene too. It was a good scene, although it was a little bit spoiled in the trailer.
Yeah,
right. But yeah,
this episode had so much this was 90% of the trailer came
pretty
from
much,
this
yeah.
episode, which makes me a little happy that it's not from ones further on that, you know, are going to be more intense, I guess.
But true. I mean, and that would make up pretty much everything from Act 1 because, you know, this is out of 6 episodes, we're going into Episode 3, so that should theoretically be the start of Act 2 mm-hmm. if it's all evenly spaced, which isn't necessarily the case. But being as this is more traditional Marvel fare than, like, WandaVision, it's probably more accurate that that's probably starting into Act 2 now.
I guess it is kind of crazy to think we're a third of the way through it already. You know, it doesn't feel like that much has happened yet, but so let's dive into it then. Obviously, Bucky's pissed about the reveal of the new Captain America. He's mad that Sam gave up the shield, and they go on a little mission together. Because Bucky won't leave Sam alone, which I don't know, that raises maybe some logistical questions about how he was just allowed on that airplane. But I mean, whatever.
He's an Avenger. I'm pretty sure he can do what he wants.
Right. Like that seems a little nebulous, but the Avengers are just kind of, they have a free pass.
They keep calling that out, you know, in the two episodes we've seen, they've definitely mentioned that multiple times that, you know, they kind of get to go where they want.
Do what they want.
I mean, to a certain degree, it's, you know, the Civil War was all about reining them in. And now after they brought everybody back and fought Thanos, the whole world's like, whatever.
Yeah, I guess they can do what they want. They saved half the universe, so.
Right, and that's kind of where the friction, the main friction of the episode, you know, other than obviously the bickering between our two heroes, is that the new Cap wants Bucky and Sam to work with him on this Flag Smasher issue. And, you know, we're supposed to believe that he's got the best intentions. We get his whole kind of backstory and introduction in this episode.
We should definitely just talk about that a bit. Sure. About him as a character at this
point. There's quite a bit to unpack with this episode. A lot of stuff that they're not saying, just some really intense, subtle things that either are going to come to fruition or not. So, you know, if you guys need me, I am here to explain comics to you and origin stories and stuff.
Will you woman explain them to us?
I'll Marvel explain them.
Okay. So first of all, the actor is wonderful. And you can see Kurt Russell coming through him.
Yeah.
That was delightful for me. As much as I know I'm going to hate this character.
Yes.
It's cool that him and his dad are both in the MCU.
It is fun. And he is doing a wonderful job, with this so far. Part of me wonders, because of how trolly WandaVision got, part of me wonders if maybe they won't take this character in the direction he historically has gone.
They're going to make him that way. Don't kid yourself.
I'm just, you know, throwing out another possibility. That's all.
Except it's already been shown that that he's going to be going a different way.
Yeah. The thing is, John Walker has a very long history in the comics, and he definitely has a slow ramp up too. So we don't know what their plans are for these characters post these shows. And they could be getting continuations in movies that we don't know about. We know that Disney is not above going back to this format. You know, Disney Plus keeps saying that they are doing well with subscribers with each new show. So it's possible. Like, I know that right now, no sequel season twos are planned, but, you know, money talks. And so anyway, John Walker could go many different directions, and we could see him go from, you know, obstacle to antagonist to full-on psychopath within just this show, or we could see all that play out over the course of a while and over multiple pieces, and it could be done really well. You know, a slow build-up to this, wouldn't it be the worst thing when we all also have Zemo and the Flag Smashers to deal with?
So my prediction is that he's going to kill somebody in the next episode brutally, like straight up. He's going to get his ass kicked by the Flag Smashers at some point, even more than he did in this episode. He's going to, if he doesn't already have the Super Soldier Serum already, then he's going to go after the power broker to get it. And that was a little unclear. Was that unclear for you guys this episode? He's like throwing the shield really far and like catching it in the, like when he was doing the interview on Good Morning America and they show like his training. Like, can a normal person do that? I know they said his stuff's off the charts, but he's not superhuman.
And no, in the comics, he does get his powers from the power broker, and he, is actually really frustrated because he can't handle the shield in the comics, and he has to go to the power broker to do so.
So do you think at this point he's already got?
I think he already has. I think we're going to see some Once we see the power broker and actually who it is, and
it's going to reveal that he got it already.
Yeah, I think it is.
Why was he totally unable to stand up to any of the Flag Smashers?
Well,
that's my problem with it too.
Bucky also has the super soldier serum, and he
that's true.
Fought yeah. off the thing is they're also super soldiers. They've received the super soldier serum as well. That's the thing. We're dealing with an entire series where everybody has a super strength to some degree,
except Falcon.
Well,
but then it shows in the trailer Falcon throwing the shield, similar to how John Walker did.
In the comics, Sam Wilson gets a super soldier serum too at some point. So
I guess, like, for me, like, I can more explain away Bucky kind of getting beat up a bit because it was kind of caught off guard. He's clearly not in a good mental headspace.
He's outnumbered.
He's clearly outnumbered. But when, you know, new Cap comes flying in on the helicopter with Battlestar, they come in with a pretty good, like, strategic advantage and very quickly lose.
Sidebar, because it's not, you know, really important enough to spend a lot of time on dissecting, but can I just say how much I love the fact that Bucky stopped the car once he learned his code name was Battlestar?
He's like, nope, I'm out.
No.
Yeah, the White Wolf has a problem with a guy named Battlestar.
Yeah.
Come on.
So that I just cracked up at that. That was one of my favorite moments in the entire episode.
That's fair.
This episode has, like, a lot of humor in it. So I was going to pick a humorous moment, that was it for me.
It was a good one. So I personally don't think that he has the serum yet.
Okay.
I think that because, like, we've seen in the trailer, Sam throwing the shield and sticking it into a tree already.
Yes.
That's apparently something that normal people can do. I'm guessing that the shield is very light. Like, vibranium, maybe that's a property of vibranium in the MCU. I don't know if it's that way in the comics, but that is extremely light compared to other metals, so that it throws like a frisbee, basically.
So during the Civil War storyline in the comics, when Steve Rogers died, he was
Bucky took the shield.
Yes, but they approached Hawkeye first, and because you know the country needs it or whatever.
Right.
And Hawkeye tries it out. He is not the first one to handle the shield, but he's the first one to not break his arm when it's coming back. And it was important to know that the boomerang effect is usually what causes the issue. It's not like people can definitely throw it, but when they try and catch it, that's when they end up having this struggle. So we don't know why at this point, why John Walker was necessarily chosen above a lot of other people, and we don't know what he had to go through yet. So it could be that he has received absolutely no super soldier serum, or that he has.
His shit was all off the charts, didn't they? All his physical.
They did, and he's got all, you know, he's won a bunch of awards and medals.
Four
and
Congressional like Medal of Honors or something like that. Medals
but
of
like,
Honor.
Here's where my problem starts to come in, though. Like, when Battlestar falls off the truck, when he gets kicked off the truck, New Cap throws the shield right under him. And I don't care who you are, I don't think a normal person can do that.
I loved that scene, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's cool.
It was really cool.
Just because, well, one, because it was cool, but also because it the whole thing, this whole episode was kind of to make you like that guy.
Right
up until the thing where don't get in our way or whatever that bullshit was. But
and you know what? I don't even think that's as like terrible. If I was in John Walker's place, I'd be like, okay, don't get in my way.
Yeah, let me just tell these two Avengers that just saved the world to just get out of our way. You know, like, what am I going to do to them?
Like, he's tried to recruit them, and I'm just saying that I know where he's going to go, and I know that I don't like him already kind of thing, but I understand where he was coming from in that moment that I don't think it was that insulting or offensive of a line.
Well, and it probably bothers him just on a personal level that these guys are basically rogues, because that line comes after Sam explains that they don't have to go through all the same red tape that he does, and they can work quicker. And that probably gets at him a little bit, because, you know, no matter who you are, red tape is frustrating unless you're the one who made the red tape. Right. And so even if we're going to end up not liking this guy, he probably isn't thrilled about the level of approval he has to go through for every single action.
Except he doesn't have to go through any for every single action, because when Bucky is getting reprimanded, he comes in and he's just like, no, he's not doing that anymore.
That was hours later. Like, it was nighttime. For all we knew, he got some type of,
yes, but it's implied, you know, that he just, like, this is, she said, on whose authority, and he just points to himself. So I mean, it's implied that he is just able to make decisions like this.
There has to be some kind of legal jurisdiction for that, though. And okay. So well, I mean, there does. Like, he can't just break out prisoners. But he didn't. So, like, there was clearly paperwork involved in that, is my point.
Clearly, they showed all the paperwork he had to go through on it. So
no, because that would not make for an interesting scene. Like, what are you going to do? You're not going to show him signing a form? Like, come on, you know what I mean? So yeah. Anyway, I think that at the moment, he's being written kind of inconsistently from a, like, physical attribute perspective.
That's what's bothering me, because, like, yeah, it's supposed to be unclear as to whether he's, like, as strong as Steve Rogers or not, right? I mean, they do make it be like, or make it seem like, hey, he's this hometown boy, like, you know, just a good old American, you know, whatever. But but then, yeah, they show him the scene that throws me every time is him throwing that shield at the targets and nailing, right, like, four targets and catching it with no issues. But then also, like, the scene that we were just talking about, and the fact that he's a soldier, right? Like, he knows combat, knows strategy, but then in that scene, he throws his weapon, his main weapon, away to save Battlestar, right? Which, is that something that somebody that would be, that's, like, very selfish, or, like, you know,
well,
that is his oldest friend, right? Like, true. Even yeah, the worst people have friends.
I thought it was a good character building scene, because you're supposed to like him in this episode, right, for the most part. So that was a good subtle way of showing his character. So I liked that, but also it didn't seem like a very, like, his tactics went out the window at that point, because now he has literally no advantage over these other, because
it didn't seem like he really had much of a plan for this type of engagement. Like, this might've been the first time that they really had to go up against a group like this without, like, military backup. Yeah. You know, and so it felt more like that was an emotional, personal decision to try and save his high school buddy, at a minimum high school buddy. We don't really know how long they've known each other, you know, and he was just trying to save him.
That whole scene was super well choreographed. I was a huge fan of the way they did that, because everything, you know, I've brought up on this podcast before about how a fight scene shouldn't just be a fight scene. It should, like, progress the story. And I think you got that. You got the character development moment for him. You got when he caught, when Bucky caught Walker's shield, and, like, the most passive aggressive catch and, like, handing it back. There was that same scene, I think, when he throws the shield, if, like, Bucky hadn't ducked, or whoever, I can't remember if it was Bucky or Falcon, but if that person hadn't ducked, he would have gotten decked in the head. And it kind of showed that Walker didn't really care, mm-hmm, that about these other people. It was mostly out for himself, and the fact that he pulls out a gun and shoots somebody.
Like, well, Cap does that in the first movie.
Yeah, Cap carries a gun, but in the first movie, but he's, like, not really Avenger Captain America at that point, right? Like, he's just a guy that's legitimate going behind the lines. Yeah, this is, like, a bunch of, you know, they're trying to bust up a terrorist tech, and Cap, I mean, he, like, never really is shown carrying a sidearm on his hip.
I mean, you're right. I guess for me, I just, that part doesn't bother me as much, because it starts to get, the line gets a little silly, because, you know, you've got Hawkeye's clearly killing people with arrows, and Iron Man's clearly killing people with his, you know, laser blasts. And so, like, if it's a pistol, I don't know if that really changes anything.
I didn't say it bothered me. It's a character development thing, right? Like, that pistol is there because it gives us very specific thoughts of, is this what Captain America is for us or not? You know what I mean? Because it's never implied. Captain America doesn't have this rule about not killing like Batman does, right? Some of these things he's done to people in the movies would definitely kill them. Like, I'm pretty sure he hit somebody with a motorcycle at one point.
Only one Batman had that rule.
The thing is, guns in this country at this current state have, you know, they are a symbol of quick, thoughtless aggression and violence. So arrows don't have that stigma anymore. They probably did, you know, a few thousand years ago, but guns have a stigma to it. So when a hero pulls out a gun, we know that just right off just with the symbolism we connected to, well, these guys aren't necessarily, you know, pure. It doesn't mean they're bad necessarily, but that they're not, I don't know, pure. Yeah, that's
it is worth noting in the comic books that when Bucky first gets the shield and goes out on his first mission with Black Widow, they come up upon a group of like five guys. And Black Widow says something like, I wonder how the new Cap is going to take care of this. And he literally just like walks out and shoots all five of them and says, I'm not Steve and I'm not trying to be Steve. So, you know, this isn't that far off from what Bucky did in the comics, really.
Right. So I think the big thing that we need to address is that John Walker is propaganda, just like Steve Rogers was at the beginning of First Avenger. They even play a rendition of the Star Spangled Man with Plan.
I loved that. That was a cool nod. At the high school.
And I think it's important to note here that once again, the government has meddled and they wanted to create a tool to distract from whatever they're going to do. This guy is going to go on Good Morning America. He's going to go in front of the cameras and be their beard.
Shake hands and sign babies.
Exactly.
Kiss babies and sign them.
Shake babies.
We hope he doesn't, but he might. He's a bad guy.
Sign hands, shake babies. Exactly. And that's what they wanted, but instead of getting a guy who refuses to be a tool and does good, he's going to end up refusing to be a tool and seeking out violence or revenge. He's not going to go rescue a ton of men behind enemy lines. He's going to go off the rails, because you can also tell that this guy does not like the fact that he's being used. You know, he's
anxious about that at the beginning of the episode.
So
who do you guys think is going to be the real villain? Like, is it going to end up being John Walker? Is it going to be the Flag Smashers? Is it going to be Zemo?
I really don't want it to be Walker, mainly because I think that you have to be really careful creating his downfall, because up until this point he's got this spotless record with, you know, all of the awards that we talked about earlier, and for him just to become a big bad guy, there needs to be some type of significant catalyst for that. And maybe it's something like, maybe Battlestar dies or something in the middle of a confrontation with the Flag Smashers, or
in the comics John Walker kills Battlestar
like by accident.
Kinda a victim of his own hubris.
Okay. Cause like I need something to make him go crazy. Cause at this point, like, maybe, you know, I don't like him necessarily, but it doesn't mean he's evil. Right? Just because he's taking up the Cap mantle doesn't mean that he's evil. So I kind of want them to be a little bit careful with that. And if Sam's gonna become Captain America at some point, I don't necessarily want it to be because the other guy just completely went insane.
Well, if John Walker ends up being the bad guy for the whole thing, it's going to be a huge political statement, because John Walker is supposed to be the down-home American apple pie baseball you know, kind of guy, that he's the representation of when the jackasses say, you know, make America great again. That's the face they imagine, that every citizen looks like him and talks like him and acts like him. So if they go all out, it will be a huge political statement. And I don't know if Disney's ready for that, but I also don't think that they're not ready. I think they could do this.
Yeah.
So in chat, Russ is saying that he thinks that he's going to go crazy after getting the super soldier serum. And so, you know, obviously that could do it. Right. It's a big problem with the soldier serum projects over the years is that most people didn't survive at all.
Well, they said in the first Avenger that it like enhances your traits you already have. So that's why they picked Cap, because he was everything good. Well, maybe John Walker has tendencies to be not so good. And so that, you know, is what. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's pretty likely. And I think that he's going to go to the Power Broker because he gets his ass whooped by the Flag Smashers multiple times and realizes he can't fight against people that have superpowers unless he himself also has superpowers. It's kind of like that good guy with a gun, you know, how does somebody that whole argument, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I need a gun to beat somebody with a gun type of deal. And I think that that's going to be like their subtle way of kind of touching on that.
Mm-hmm.
So it also doesn't really bode well for his wife that we briefly met, because, you know, in the comics, his family was murdered, and it's very likely that she's going to be, you know, another woman in a fridge.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that super soldier serum. So in the comics, Steve is obviously not the only one that gets it. Steve is one of the few people that it works on, but we also meet Isaiah Bradley in this episode. And this comes from a comic called Red, White, and Truth, where they kind of take from real life. During World War II, American government experimented on black soldiers. This is kind of there. So Isaiah was picked out of a group of men, and he received the super soldier serum, not willingly and involuntarily. He was sent behind enemy lines to, you know, kind of do some horrible shit after Cap disappeared. And then he was arrested in the comics for stealing Cap's uniform, even though they gave it to him. And he says here in the show that he was gone for, or he was put away for 31 years. So Steve Rogers is the only one who has received this super soldier serum to a certain degree. And it actually worked out for him that he's had, and he still had a really tough life. He absolutely did. But he was the only one not, you know, I guess, completely victimized by it.
I think it's important to note that when Isaiah is being experimented on, he's one of 300 men and the only one to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an intense scene meeting him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seeing his strength, throwing that thing into the wall. I mean, that was cool. That reminded me a lot of when Steve like ripped that log in half. Anything with wood apparently seems very similar to me. I don't know. But yeah,
it's the sound. It's that snapping and crunching, you know.
And also wood is very dense. So to throw something into it that's thick like that is pretty powerful, mm-hmm. you know.
That kid is supposed to be Eli Bradley, who goes on to become the Patriot and leader of the Young Avengers. Now, that remained to be seen if the same actor will do that, but they've introduced the characters in. It's now the fifth Young Avenger that we've seen so far on screen.
Now, for me, I think one of the most interesting things about the scene with Isaiah is that he basically is both Sam and Bucky.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, you know, the idea is like Sam and Bucky have very different issues. And it's part of why they bicker with each other so much, because they both have a lot of emotional strain and a lot of very serious things going on in their heads, but they're different. And so they have a hard time relating to each other. But Isaiah's actually had to go through both of those types of things. And I think it's really a unique experience to see all three of them there. And I'm a little disappointed we don't get more of him. Maybe we get to see him again at some point, but I think having some conversations with the three of them could be just really eye-opening.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, it was a powerful enough scene, even as short as it was. But yeah, it would be great to get more of that. And then, you know, one of the most controversial scenes in the show on Twitter and just the internet in general happens right after that, outside of the house. Mm-hmm. You know, I've talked to several people this week that feel like the show is being very preachy about the racial issues in the world right now and things like that. I didn't feel that way. I felt it was, you know, it's a little heavy-handed, but it's not, I think it has to be, because, you know, subtlety is not something that people are picking up on right now in regards to these things. Unless you're getting slapped in the face with it, you're not paying attention. You know what I mean? Or not you guys, but I think right. Society in general.
Well, I also think, you know, it's hard to be super subtle with it when you have your main characters, and those are the characters that you're going to see go through stuff, right? They're not going to do a scene with some random person that we've never seen before and never will see again go through one of those things. That's not going to impact the overall story. And the reality is that science fiction and fantasy, which comic book genre falls under those, have had a responsibility for a very long time to do these types of conversations, sometimes in pretty heavy-handed ways, you know.
Having Cap punch Hitler was pretty heavy-handed, you know. It's not
in the new 1970s when they did the Green Lantern Green Arrow story, and Green Arrow calls out Green Lantern for ignoring the issues on Earth, but he goes out and he fights like the injustices of the galaxy, and this black man is like, I see you protecting the green people, the purple people, the orange people, but what have you ever done for the black people here on Earth? You know, people thought that was preachy too, and now we look back on it as being one of the pinnacle moments of comics kind of pushing the boundaries of what is right and wrong. So, you know, people can complain about this being heavy-handed at times. The loan shark scene from the loan scene with the banker in the first episode is very heavy with systemic racism. However, it's not as heavy-handed as the cop thing, or even the people that want to deny that there's racism here in America know that the Black Lives Matter movement is heavily against cop brutality and has been fighting that. So you see cops in the show and they know what it's about. They're not ignorant. They know exactly what they're going to say, what's coming next. So I think that sometimes story calls for heavy-handedness, and this is one of them.
Subtlety is not getting the message across. So.
Those cops pulled over a black man for having a raised voice over something he absolutely deserved to have a raised voice over. And it turns out he's not even the one with the warrants, but the cops don't give a shit until they know who he is. And then all of a sudden it's like, sorry. We didn't know. So you're just going to harass this guy for no reason.
The reality is that fiction has tried allegory for a long time and people didn't get it. You know, in the 60s, Star Trek's episode, Let This Be Your Last Battlefield, is about a planet where people are white on one side and half on the other, black on the other half of their face. And there's another group that's opposite that, and they hate each other for that reason and that reason alone. And people still don't know that's about racism. People still don't get the point of that episode. And so all this does, I don't even think it's heavy handed. I think it just shows real world examples of what actual normal people have to go through. And that in this case, you know, it didn't help Sam in the first episode to be an Avenger. And in the second one, it did help de-escalate the situation. And that in itself is a problem, that he had to be an Avenger to de-escalate the situation. You know, it's like the early episode of in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, where Will and Carlton get arrested for driving too nice of a car, and everything is a problem until it turns out that Uncle Phil's a lawyer at a big law firm. Now all of a sudden the cops want to listen and take a step back. It shouldn't have to be that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that this isn't heavy-handed. This is just showing reality and what it takes when you are a black man out there in the United States, that you have to be a cop for people to back down, or you have to be, you know, a public official or an athlete or something noticeable for people to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with heavy-handedness in some stories. Like, if you're going for symbolism, then yeah, heavy-handedness kind of defeats your point. But this stuff is real, and it's not even the worst we've seen in real life. If this was real life, there's a good chance Sam would have had a couple bullets to the chest at some point.
On that happy note, what's next up on the docket thing? So at that point, Bucky gets arrested because he skipped his therapy sessions, which isn't all that shocking because he didn't want to be at the one in the first episode. So that's not too surprising. And that's when we get our great little scene between Sam and Bucky at couples therapy. So before we dive into that, I think this would be a good spot for us to take a short break. And when we come back, that's where we will pick things up. All right. We'll be right back, everybody.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, we're back. So we've got couples therapy. Sam and Bucky couples therapy. What'd you guys think?
It was adorable. I thought it was really funny. And then I thought it was like, it got to the necessary point where we finally get the answer of why Sam gives up the shield. And at like Bucky, I'm not satisfied with that answer. I still think there's a little bit more to it, but we'll see.
I think more importantly, even than finding out why Sam didn't give up the shield, is finding out why Bucky took it so personally when Sam gave up the shield. That was, I think, the main takeaway for me of that scene. But yeah, I mean, it's it shows, I think we've all felt that at some point, that kind of, you know, imposter syndrome is very relatable, especially for people that create things, which obviously all three of us do. So, you know, I think we can all relate to that on some level. And I liked that, you know, no, even if you're an Avenger and you've saved the world and done all these, you know, you still have that syndrome. Like, maybe I'm not that guy, you know?
Well, so we've only ever heard about Black Widow removing the red from her ledger, whereas with Bucky, we have seen it. We've seen the red that he is talking about, that he's trying to atone for. And I, too, would be haunted by that constantly. So it's without a doubt not surprising he has imposter syndrome.
Well, I mean, yes, that's obviously a thing that exists and something that maybe he's dealing with. But I think there's even more to it than that, because part of it is, what would he have become if he hadn't been the Winter Soldier, right? Would he have been a good person? Would he have been a good man? Would he have been a good soldier? All of those types of things. And Cap being kind of the epitome of what it means to be a good person still believed in him, still saw the good in him, is kind of what kept him going. Right, it gave him something.
This is motivation. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it was this bright spot in the world sees something good in me. So if I work hard enough, I can be that good. And if you remove that, then that's where things really get dark. Because if nobody thinks that there's good in him, why should he think there is?
Yeah.
Right. And I think that that's a really important scene, and it's a lot heavier than most of the emotional stuff we get in the MCU. You know, we talk about Iron Man 3 dealing with PTSD, and a lot of people kind of write that one off. And I think that this is doing a better job. I think the writing has gotten more sophisticated when it's dealing with these types of, you know, depression issues, other mental struggles. I really thought it was a good line.
Yeah, it definitely is.
We didn't mention the scene where we get the White Wolf reference again. And then I think probably my favorite scene in the episode where Sam like sneaks up on Bucky, just kind of like appears behind him. I thought that was great. You know, Sam has some skills too. Mm-hmm. But then seeing Red Wing get destroyed was sad, especially when it made like the sad chirp when she smashes it.
Ray and I were joking about how, well, they did that because it was just too expensive of special effects work.
Probably, honestly. But I mean, he'll get another Red Wing, you know?
Right, but like at the very end of the season.
Oh, yeah. It'll be like a Stark Tech Red Wing.
I don't know. If he's Captain America at the end of the season, maybe it'll be something like an eagle or something.
It's true. Yeah, he'll have a literal bald eagle flying around with him.
Yep, a literal bald eagle. Yeah. Maybe he'll also name it Bucky.
Oh God, I hope so.
God, imagine that conversation.
So in the comic books, maybe Rachel can give me more insight to this. Didn't John Walker run around with a group of like shirtless commandos that were called like the Buckies or something like that?
Please have that be true.
I'm pretty sure it's true.
I'm not remembering.
Like there, it's an acronym for something, but it spelled out Bucky. Like they were Buckies is what they were called, I think. I read something about it. And I was like, oh my God, if that's real. And Battlestar was one of them, I think. I don't remember. I'll look it up.
Battlestar was like most, mostly clothed.
He was. I don't think we're going to get to see the shirtless, like, gun-strapped commandos following John Walker around, but maybe we will.
Meets Magic Mike here in the MCU.
Yeah, basically.
So, okay. And then... that this is, of course, where we end up with kind of the confrontation towards the end, where Bucky and Sam basically tell new Cap, no, they're not going to be working with him. They're going to be doing it their own way. And he kind of threatens them, you know, with a stay out of my way kind of tone. And at that point, I think, like, I agree with Ray that that's not really that big of a statement from his perspective. But I think as the audience, we're supposed to think that that's the switch. From him being this nice, good guy to being an antagonist, not necessarily a villain, right? But an antagonist. I'm not really sure there's much else to add to that because we talked a little bit about it earlier. Anything you want to add?
Well, no, not really. I'm very eager to see where we are with Zemo. The fact that they're going to have to team up with Zemo for a bit and then he's going to betray them to a certain degree, or, you know, they'll get tired of it. I'm eager to see where that goes, but right now that is not what we should be talking about. We should be talking about the Flag Smashers and how those were not vaccines. They were stealing serum from the power broker, and most likely I'm theorizing here that their end goal is like the whole plot of the Incredibles, when everybody's special, nobody is, they're gonna disperse the serum to people, and that poor guy like went down in a blazing glory to get them good.
What did he even do? He just like knocked over his health pole and walked out in front of him and got shot a bunch of times.
He distracted them so that they could get off the ground. Like,
I just thought we were gonna see something cool.
No, by blocking. Well, I think that's what he was hoping, is to kind of make a last stand, but since all he has is super strength and not, you know, resiliency or bullet immunity, he knocked it down so they can drive after him. And then he just died by machine guns.
Yeah.
I mean, pushing the whole power line thing over was impressive. I can't do that.
That's true. I mean, he was a super soldier, so.
You know, so at least that's something.
Yeah.
I mean, the Flag Smashers are interesting, right? Because right now they're kind of painting both sides of the story here. And, you know, they are from the blip, and they remember when the world was kind of forced to come together, and, you know, national borders came down because we all had to work together on, you know, strained resources and strained connections and things of that nature. And it's an interesting point to be made, because now that things are back, and I actually talked about this last week, how like I felt like nothing was different, how like everything was just fine. And I guess that was on purpose, because that's what the Flag Smashers are upset about, that like everything just immediately went back to the way it was before the blip, where all the borders are back up and the militaries are back up and nationalism is, you know, back in full force. And, you know, you have just, it's almost like it never happened. And the people mm-hmm. who were there, who lived through it, they've changed. They had to change. It was 5 years. And so they're not the same people that they were, but they're expected to live in that same world that has just come back.
Yeah, they are. It's upsetting. And I like the line, you know, they're so happy about everybody that came back. They forgot about all of us that were still here.
It's a very interesting idea, because a lot of the time the like terrorist organizations in TV and film get just these very glossed over motives, excuse me, right? You know, they're stealing arms, or they're stealing chemical weapons, or, you know, whatever. And there's very little...
when 24 came out, it was almost 100% racial motivation. They just wanted to put some brown actors in a bad position, have them be, you know, a terrorist of the week, and not give any sort of depth or motivation or reasoning behind anything. They just wanted to make the weird nationalism pro war after 9/11 kind of bullshit statements.
I don't have anything to add to that.
Okay, I'm like,
I don't know. Are we talking about 24 now? Like, that's what.
I was just agreeing that, you know, TV has this trope of not giving motivation to terrorist organizations. It's easy to put a couple of people in on the antagonist side, call them terrorists, and that's it. That's all you have to do. So. It's very cool that now in phase four of the MCU, we are getting complex villains, complex antagonists, people with motivations where we all sit back and we're like, oh, yeah, I can see that. That makes sense. Might do that. That's all I'm saying.
Like, you talk about what's heavy-handed. What's heavy-handed is like Red Skull. Red Skull is a heavy-handed thing, right? He's this super Nazi that kind of looks like a devil mm-hmm. skeleton person. You know, like, I like the idea of our villains being multifaceted, with them having backstories and having clear motivations that are more than just, I want to conquer the world because, you know, like, that's just not that interesting anymore. And don't get me wrong, a lot of these classic comic book villains were written that way because that's how comic books, you know, were, because they were short and they were meant for kids, and that's how that was. But I like that the MCU has grown up a bit and is getting more sophisticated.
I think, but I mean, that's also the narrative that the US wanted us to have, you know, Germany and Japan bad, America good. Like, they didn't want there to be any more layers to that.
Sure. But I mean, even other villains, like, you know, the Joker, for example, or, you know, the Penguin and Catwoman, like, these are very, you know, generically motivated characters early on. And it wasn't until much, much later that they got more depth.
I'm going to say probably the most controversial thing I've said on this episode, and that the Joker is still not, he has zero depth. His motivation is still lame.
It's fine. That wasn't really what I was trying to say, but that's okay.
Okay. I'm just going to leave, because apparently I'm saying all the wrong things.
All of them. All of the wrong things.
I think that's why Zemo in this show is going to be, and in the MCU so far, is an interesting villain, because his motivation is not world domination. In Civil War, his motivation is to turn the Avengers against each other and break them up from the inside because of what they did to his family in Sokovia. So, you know, his motivation is not a mustache twirling villain. It's something much, much deeper and more personal than that. It's why Killmonger worked also in Black Panther. But in the show, we're going to get Zemo, and we know that. And it'll be interesting to see where he's at this point, and what exactly he's gonna be. You know,
it's really interesting, because if my theory is correct, and the flag smashers are smuggling serum, and they want more people to have the serum to kind of protect themselves and go back to the way they were, then that's completely opposite of what Zemo's motivation is, where, you know, he doesn't want any more superheroes because all they do is cause carnage, and it's going to put them at odds. Like, how are they both wrong and right at the same time?
For sure. I'm definitely curious where they're going to go with that. And I guess we're going to get Zemo probably right at the beginning of this next episode, based on the way this one ended.
Yeah, I assume.
I'd imagine so. Same with Sharon Carter.
I'm waiting to see her. She was great with the little that we've got of her. You know, I was a big Peggy Carter fan, so seeing Sharon Carter will be really cool. But I mean, we haven't gotten much of her in the MCU at this point, so hopefully it's cool, I guess.
Yeah.
Other than just like Cap's potential love interest in, which was awkward in, what was that, Civil War?
Yeah, it ended up being awkward. It wasn't awkward at first.
Then it got real awkward.
It's weird now. If you think about it too much, it gets really weird.
Especially now that Cap has gone back in time to be with Peggy. Like, yeah, it makes it.
Uh-huh.
Is she or is she not his niece?
Like, right.
Man, I don't know.
Timelines, man.
I guess she has to be, right?
Yeah.
But didn't Cap go to a different timeline?
That's where the time travel in the MCU gets a little funky.
I don't think we need to get into that, but
yeah, that's a different episode.
Yeah.
So chat wants to know, do we think that episode 3 is going to be a jailbreak episode? And that is a very interesting question, because for me, can Sam and Bucky just walk in and say hi to Zemo whenever they feel like it? Or do they have to like bust in there? What do you think?
Well, we know that he gets out of jail, Zemo does, because we've seen in the trailers him walking outside of jail. So we know he gets out somehow. I guess it's, do Bucky and Sam just kind of like pull him out because they need him? And then he escapes? Or like, you know, does he break out or do they break in?
I can't imagine that they on their own have the authority to release him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, so I think they have to break him out. I think they're going to break him out of jail or whatever you want to call that place.
That's just going to put targets on them again. They're going to have to get re-pardoned in another, you know, megalomaniac alien's going to have to come down.
Yeah, probably. I mean, that's the MCU, right?
That's the MCU.
Well, yeah. I mean, eventually we are going to get them fighting like Kang or Mephisto or something else.
Or that both of them at once.
Will retain. Yeah.
Both exactly. of them at once. Doctor actually, go. Guys.
Galactus.
I think Walker is Mephisto.
Mm-mm. No. No. This shows Mephisto is actually Arnim Zola, where he was behind it the whole time.
Is that the guy that's in the computer now?
It is. Yeah.
Seems likely.
He's a less silly MODOK.
Yeah, I can see that.
Which will even look less silly than normal, starting with the new TV show that's about to drop for MODOK, because that looks ridiculous as hell.
That's true.
Are you going to watch that, Ryan?
I don't know. When does it come out?
In May or April? Soon?
I'll probably watch it eventually. Probably not right when it comes out, though. I got too much other stuff that I need to watch.
Fair enough. Nathan Fillion's in it. He's playing Wonder Man.
Yeah, doesn't really appeal to me.
Okay,
he's fine, but yeah. I wasn't a Firefly fan, so I don't really have the same attachment to him that everybody else does.
Everybody else, it's just you.
Oh, most nerds, I would say like 95%. It seems like, but a large percentage.
Mm, mm, mm. Mm-hmm. Oh, Ray, do you feel like singing? Chat would like you to sing.
Why? What?
I don't know. That's what it says. That was Zola all along. Chat's fun tonight. I appreciate them. I appreciate you guys.
Yes,
all of you.
Chat's wonderful.
Yes, thank you. Is there anything else that you guys want to talk about from episode 2 or anything to that effect? Did we miss anything?
Probably, but I'm satisfied.
They're putting a lot of layers into these characters, and not just Falcon and Winter Soldier, but every aspect of the story is interesting. I do wish there was slightly more money put into removing green screen in certain places, but
yeah,
that's really my only nitpick. I really liked this episode.
Yeah, I mean, the green screen in this episode in this show overall has been more noticeable than it was in WandaVision. So
yes.
Yeah, but I mean, WandaVision didn't have the kind of action sequences that we've clearly already had in just 2 episodes of this show. So
they're two completely different shows.
Yeah, and obviously this one probably doesn't need nearly as much of a CG type team as WandaVision did. So
exactly, because I mean, WandaVision had a ton of CG work that you just don't even really notice because they did an amazing job with it, and that doesn't get the credit that it really deserves a lot of the time. You'd be shocked at how often CGI is in your face and you just didn't know that that's what was happening.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the truck fight scene, there was definitely some weird green screen moments in the background and stuff like that, especially with Sam flying and a couple of the closer up shots. But I mean, with what they're doing, I think it's still very good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it hasn't detracted from anything for me, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
Usually that stuff distracts me quite a bit.
It did get me in that scene, but that's it. And so I think that's a pretty minor issue at this point, especially since, you know, this has a lot more going for it than just a couple of fight scenes. So I'm definitely willing to look past that.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, then I think we should wrap things up here. Next week, we'll be covering episode 3, whatever they end up calling it. So join us for that if you're enjoying our conversations. If you want to join our chat, thank you to everybody who did that this week. We really appreciate your conversation with us. Some just fantastic comments and thoughts. You can join us live on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern on our Facebook page, the Screen Heroes Podcast Facebook page. We do this live so you can chat with us. So please do that. If you can't join us live, but you have comments or questions and you want us to hear and think about those, you can actually leave us a voicemail. And it might make the show. You can call us at 913-890-3007 and leave us a voicemail, and it just might make the show. So we would appreciate anything that you have to say as long as it is appropriate. We, of course, are the Screen Heroes Podcast. You can find us at Screen Heroes Pod pretty much everywhere on social media. Go to screen-heroes.com to find all of our links that we have out there in the world for you. You can find me at The Star Trek Dude. Ray, where can people find you?
Apparently singing next week.
You have homework.
Yeah, right? And I also have to sing for D&D, too. This is bullshit. Like, you told me that like me and Zach have to do a sea shanty.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that wasn't a request for you guys to actually sing. That was going to be a series of performance checks. If you guys turned into something more than that, that's on you.
Oh, I thought we were legit singing. My bad.
Maybe you are. I don't know. That wasn't my intention. I would never force anybody to sing in a Dungeons & Dragons campaign.
I think bards should be forced to sing if they're not gonna, you know, come up with like little quips.
Limericks.
Yeah, this exactly. is now our D&D podcast.
So. All right, fine. Ray is at Siren Ray. Ryan, you can find over at Buster Props. Thank you so much for joining us. We will catch you next time.